He is Justin Davis, user experience designer and traveling troubadour.
Traveling troubadour, that is for sure this week. And he is Aubrey Goodman, web services and mobile dev extraordinaire and master of the microphone.
And this,
I know, I feel like we should cue some Beck music at this point right there. And this is a little show that we like to call Distilled. Welcome in. Good to have all of you here with us again. We don't have beer people in here.
I was gonna say, hopefully you've all sobered up from last week.
The last episode, that's right.
I'm not actually sure we have.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's been a very busy social calendar for both of us.
Yeah, quite a bit. But here we are, we're gonna talk about technology again.
Mm.
If you want to find us on Twitter, by the way, you can find me, that's Justin, at JWD2A on Twitter. You can find Aubrey at a sensible name, at Aubrey Goodman on Twitter. You can find this podcast wherever you found it, probably for sale in the back of a VW van or at Podomatic or on iTunes. Just search for Distilled. And as always, if you want to hear us talk about something on the show, just tweet with the hashtag Distilled Topics, and we'll try to pick that up. And we've not had bourbon on the show in a long time. Are we going to have to change the name of this show?
We just
have to call this Teetotaler's Junction.
That would be the most epically ironic name in the history of ironic names.
Very true. Yeah. So anyway, today we're going to talk about some new stuff that's happening with apps out there, some app and app design, product strategy type of things.
21st century interactivity.
That's right.
Or maybe perfect. The lack thereof.
Or the lack thereof. So, yeah.
Passive indeed. Interactions and
indeed.
That sort of thing.
So this was spurred on by a move that happened well over the weekend, as well as an article that I read last week in TechCrunch. And it's all sort of comes off of this split that Foursquare had, taking Foursquare and ripping it into two apps, creating Swarm and creating just Foursquare itself, which is odd. I've used Swarm. I used Swarm last night to just see what it was like. It's very nicely designed.
Mm.
It's interesting. It definitely moves the product value proposition into a different area. It feels like it goes back to what Foursquare originally pitched as their value proposition, say 4 or 5 years ago when we all started using it.
What was that?
That was see who of your friends are nearby and connect up with them at places.
Oh,
that's
okay.
How Foursquare originally pitched everything.
Interesting.
Yeah. And so now that's pretty much exactly what Swarm is doing. Swarm actually says, within 500 feet of you, here are the people. Within a mile, here are the people. Mm-hmm. Within 5 miles, here are the people. Da, 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 da. So on and so forth. And you can also check in. It's interesting that the check-in seems to have been a little bit downplayed in the design of Swarm. Not downplayed. I mean, it's fairly obvious. It's fairly central. But the narrative is really about this sort of who's close by and can you connect with them kind of thing. Either way, that's what Swarm is doing. And there was an article in TechCrunch that talked about this and made some interesting points, and I think it's worth talking about because I've seen this come up recently with some client work that I've been working on as I've been thinking about designing stuff, and as well as some of the work that we're doing with Drawer. And I'm realizing, as this article sort of brought to the forefront of my mind, that the way we think of products in the digital space today is starting to change. And I think it's going to undergo a fairly substantial shift. So this article, if you want to read it, it's called Foursquare Swarm and the Rise of the Invisible App. And essentially, I'm not going to read you the whole thing. It talks about the fact that there have been sort of three shifts in how we use mobile apps. I think this is interesting. The first, it says that it was the information appliance model. So using software, you transform your phone into a mostly monopurpose device, just like it said on the tin. Now it's a phone, now it's a calculator, now it's a messaging tool, blah, blah, blah. A fairly modal type of use of the product, right? The second one was the home screen era. It's what they say, where every app fought hard to be on your home, hard to be your home base. That was where everything kind of consolidated, and it was like, let us be your dashboard on your phone, right? This type of thing.
So that's more like the phone is itself a dashboard of a larger experience, and you're right. only targeting just like a smaller subset of that just for the mobile.
Yeah.
But now you think you're moving away from that?
Well, I mean, and or, what I think it is we... what, and I think the most, I think the most prevalent example of that was Foursquare when they launched the Android app that basically took over the launch screen. And it was like, your phone was not Foursquare. I said Foursquare. I meant Facebook. Mm. Your phone was basically Facebook, right? Like, they tried to wedge everything in there to where your phone became Facebook, and then you sort of accessed everything through that, right? They wanted to be the experience.
Right.
And now it says we're entering the age of apps as service layers. These are the apps that you have on your phone, but only open when you know they explicitly have something to say to you. They aren't for, quote, idle browsing. They're purpose-built and informed by contextual signals like hardware sensors, location, history use, and predictive computation. And it's talking about these as invisible apps. I think this is interesting. I think what's interesting about it is it, and I think it's correct, and we can walk through a few examples of what this means, but it shows a shift from measuring success, I think in one way this is true, from the number of times your app is opened to, or the number of times somebody engages in the app, to a little bit of a different qualifier of what makes a successful interaction, right?
Well, I think you're onto something there. I have always thought, I mean, I'm an analytics whore, and I love, it's like, my daily routine is like read email, then delete email, then go and play in a candy store for 20 minutes while I'm reading analytics from last week.
That's right.
This is not something I should do every day, but yet here I am.
Yes. It's addicting.
But it is, but it isn't. And it's so tricky, I think, to get to the point where you really understand what you're looking at. You know, you're measuring some kind of raw behavioral data, number of launches, number of unique monthly users, you know, those sorts of things. And in most cases, we rely on other platforms to kind of make those decisions for us and say, we think you care about monthly unique users, so here's your, you know, daily report of monthly unique users. And
yeah,
like, okay, but what, I mean, if that's like that, there was a, I want to say it was like an advertisement I saw where there, this company gets really excited because they get their website out online and they start to get all these orders. And they're like, holy crap, we're not going to be able to keep up with this. And they're thinking, yay, we're in the money right now. And then like they cut to the other side of that. And it's like a cat clicking a mouse over and over and over because there's a literal picture of a mouse on the mouse.
That's awesome.
He's trying to get it.
That's awesome.
And it's like tons of orders, but not actual orders.
Right.
So it seems to me that it's rather easy to get caught up in sort of this aggregate perception of things and lose sight of what's really being measured without more targeted metrics. Now,
right.
What we tend to use in the apps that I work on would be something like a sequence of things that you do. So you prompt the user, if they react to the prompt, that's a strong indication that they're engaged.
Right.
They have not just casually dismissed an alert on their phone.
Yeah.
But they're interested in that enough to foreground the app for a second to make a decision.
Right.
And I think that's really what we're talking about
here. Absolutely. I think one thing that's important about this is something that we probably should have realized a long time ago, and I think some people have, and some people think about this, but most of us don't, is that the app isn't the product. And that's something that I don't think a lot of people think about, but the app is a conveyance method for the value, but it's not necessarily the product or service in and of itself. Let me give you an example of that. Let me use drawers as an example because I can talk freely about it. One of the things that we've thought about as we've been designing it and been working through looking at how people use the app and what it's supposed to do is, so we've decided that one of the value propositions we want to deliver on, one of the ways we think that we can impact people's lives is helping them try more of the places that they've intended to try but have forgotten about. Like, we want to be able to execute on that piece of value, right? Mm. Now, we can do that in a lot of different ways, right? We could...
digital archaeology.
Right? We could say, okay, the app will alert you, give you a geo notification when you're nearby a place you want to try. Mm-hmm. Okay? That's valuable, right? It's backgrounded most of the time. We don't need you to be in the app every day. Right. What we need is at just-in-time notifications to help you make better decisions, right? So that we can use geofencing and things like that. Mm-hmm. But we can also do things like we can send you an email on a Thursday and say, oh, by the way, here's a place you wanted to try. It looks like you're in Tampa this weekend. Don't forget to go try this place.
And they can even interrogate your calendar and say, like, so looks like you got nothing planned tomorrow.
Exactly, exactly. Now, what that does, and that's a simple example, but it says Drawer, the app, is not the product. Drawer, the website, is not the product. Drawer, the product, is a series of things and notifications and services that coordinate an effort toward helping accomplish a goal for you.
Right.
That's a big shift. It's a service design level thinking about how products work.
Very different.
Yes.
I like that. And it's not just because I'm a web service architect. It's kind of what I do. But yeah, I mean, I think that was kind of what we were always headed towards. You know, people 10 years ago talked about service-oriented architecture and how, you know, that was like the big buzzword. But I don't think anybody really understood what it meant.
Right.
They were just kind of going along with the buzzwords and, you know, even the people who did know what it meant didn't know what it means or what it would evolve into,
mm-hmm.
which is this larger, you know, experience, which is not just a pull request. Oh, I need to get hotel availability. Okay, here's the search parameters.
Right.
Whatever. Here's your results. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the maybe that is it. It's push versus pull. Where push notification and the existence of a mobile device capable of receiving complex events, you know, like that, and then offering you, in this case, you know, very much this passive experience where you're only prompted to make a decision when the machine or the system has determined that you might actually want to make a
right.
decision. Now, Windows users will be unfamiliar with this experience, as Windows seems to assume that everything is like 10,000 choices.
Right.
And like 20,000 somehow clicks.
Yeah, right.
All I wanted to do was unlock the damn display. Suddenly it's asking me for all this stuff. I got to confirm or allow. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know?
That's right. Yeah. I think it shifts the thinking, and I was talking with a colleague of mine who is another user experience designer up in Vancouver. She's very smart. And she was relaying a conversation or a blog post that she'd read from another UX person that really struck a chord with me. And it really made me rethink about what, or at least maybe not rethink, but clarified to me what the core of at least user experience and product design is about.
Mm.
And I've said this for a long time. I've said that it's not about designing the interfaces. That's a part of it. That's not what user experience design
is.
User interface. This is why the UX UI thing is a bunch of bullshit, right? And the slash is crazy talk, right? No. Don't ever say UX UI thinking that they mean the same thing. They don't. That's like saying UX IA or UX VD, visual design.
Wow. Didn't know it was going to turn into that podcast so quickly.
I know, right? But this blogger who had written the blog post, and forgive me, I don't remember the name, or I would pass it along, but had said that user experience design and product design is about orchestration. It's about being a conductor of activities, not being the interface. The interface is required to actually carry out the activity. We have to have something that the user interacts with in order to tell the device what to do. But the higher level that so many people miss, and I think why a lot of products fail, is you don't think of delivering a product experience as orchestrating an experience. Mm. Thinking, what happens when I come in contact with this, or I haven't been using it for a while for this, or da da da. How do we coordinate the activity between these disparate sets?
Oh.
of devices and touch points and this type of thing. And so we're getting into cross-channel design a little bit here, which is going to be a bigger and bigger part of what all of us do as technologists. But I think it also speaks to the notion that this idea that, you know, how many times a day did a user open your app isn't necessarily the right way to think of it anymore. Right.
Well, I think it's even more than that. It was never really a good way to deal with it in the first place. It's just that we didn't have this service
model
design approach to it, and the larger system attitude. And you know, I mean, I think without the asynchrony, without the ability to push to the device, it is all pull. It's all the user takes, like makes a choice to pull the phone out of their pocket, and find the app that is top of mind for some other reason.
It's interesting. So you said earlier, this is a move in some ways from pull to push. And that's a very interesting way to think about it, because it we typically design experiences and design products based on a pull model. The person's going to open it and they're going to see this thing and then they press buttons to get more information.
The zeroth law of user experience or of interactivity design.
Yeah. But maybe what we're saying is that we have missed the boat on effectiveness because we fail to consider how important push is to an experience. And that it may be possible and in fact probable for some products that the percentage of time interacting with a product via push way outweighs the pull. And that as an organization, you're okay with that.
Well, I think it comes down to quality of experience too. If I have to search through a bunch of bullshit to find some piece of information that I was interested in, and oh, by the way, there's 20 million ads in the mix that distract me from whatever it was that I was really trying to find, then I'm going to spend a lot of time. And so it's going to look like the experience is really rich. But what that might actually be is spectacular frustration on the user's part where they cannot find the shit they're looking for. And so they're spending a lot of time. Now, I guess this is comes back to just like the bounce rate thing, where if what your web page is a single, like a brochure that tells you about something offline, then bounce rate is expected to be 99%, 100%. Like, why would they stay?
Right, exactly.
Where would they go after?
I don't know. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
It's a PDF.
Yeah, yeah.
It's basically.
Right, the bounce rate of a PDF is always 100%.
Yeah.
And that's okay, because PDFs are still valuable. So.
And exactly, and that's a non-interactive thing, and that's the key. What's the interaction model? If the interaction model takes into consideration the higher level, you know, like the wider scope things of why they're even thinking about the interaction in the first place, such as, for example, if they were prompted to do something because some preference engine decided based on some settings that they put in a system that they might like this broccoli copter.
Yep. Broccoli copter. That sounds like the best thing ever, by the way.
I may be projecting a little. I love both broccoli and helicopters. So it's my id, or whichever one it is.
Well, you know, this came up recently, not broccoli copters, but this whole idea came up recently in a project I was working on with a client that I'm actually flying to Nashville tonight to work on said project. So this is a very timely discussion because I'm going to bring all this up to them tomorrow. And they were, they're in the financial services world and they have a web app. The web app doesn't have a ton of usage. And they contacted me and they said, we want you to help us design a mobile app. I said, okay. Why? And, you know, we went back and forth on this whole, well, we just think we should have a mobile app thing. And I said, well, I don't think you should. I don't know that your users really need a mobile app. And
I guess you really need a horse, too, if we're going to sell you things that you just arbitrarily out of the air.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Okay, so yeah, let's go down that list.
I can put plenty of things on that list.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mark them all up.
yeah, absolutely. Great. How big is your budget?
Right.
And so I think what's interesting is we have to change the conversation we have to stop thinking about the artifacts first. We think, I need a website, I need a web app, I need a mobile app, I need a thing, right? And we need to ask first, what are we trying to get people to do?
Right.
And what is the best way to get people to do it? And sometimes the best way to do it is to send a perfectly timed email.
Yeah.
And that's all we have to do. That's it.
I mean, we could even argue that a knock on the door at the right time is better than any digital interaction.
Right. Exactly. And so I think that in technology, we fall into the trap a little bit of this sort of, we have a hammer, everything's a nail type of approach to product design, right? And when in fact, we probably should be exercise a little bit more restraint and maturity in our thought and say, wait a second, we could design this app, but it's unlikely people will use it because they don't need to interact with this information often. They don't need to consume it in a mobile context. They don't need a da-da-da-da-da. Mm-hmm. Let's think one level above and say, what are we trying to change about somebody's behavior? What are all the options available for us, digital and non-digital, to do that? And let's work from there down. And that's what orchestration is about, right? And I think that when you see, even if the answer is we have a mobile app, but the mobile app almost never gets opened, that's okay, right?
We need to take a tip from umbrella salesman.
Umbrella salesman.
Stand on the street corner with a nice brand new umbrella. You're dry as a bone. Everybody walking by.
Right.
You have to be there in the storm. If you show up at the beach on a sunny day with an umbrella, a bad example because of the sun, but you show up in Times Square with an umbrella on a sunny day, and you're not going to sell a lot of umbrellas.
Right. Yes.
But same day, same place, tons of rain.
Understanding the result, right? Understanding the benefit, that the change that you're trying to affect.
which is a little bit, almost, a little, maybe, if you squint hard enough, like the brick with the note tied to it for glass repair.
Right, yeah, yeah, that's right.
That's taking it just a little further than I think what we're talking about, but that would be the offline version, I think, of the...
Right.
So, need glass repair, huh?
yeah, exactly, right? I think... It's interesting because there may become a time when we rethink this modal nature of apps on phones. We it's not like, oh, install my app and then open it a bunch to this. It's like, install the app, don't put it on your home screen.
And then do nothing.
Just forget about it and let it handle the rest.
Well, I promise you Apple will reject that app because that very exact thing happened to me. I had an app called Haunt, which never made it published because they rejected it because they quote, it isn't useful enough.
Oh, yeah.
Because what it was doing was tracking your behavior, your movement throughout space.
Right.
And trying to match you against other people who have similar commute patterns so that it could connect you and say, hey, guys, you should just commute. Like, you should carpool.
Right.
You know.
Which is a great idea.
I think so. But because Apple doesn't want to... I guess they don't want to have long-term thinking. They want to have short-term thinking, which is surprising for them, given how much investment in that ecosystem they've made.
Yeah.
But this sort of thing is going to be complicated. Because it'll be like, well, yep, you install the app, and then that's it.
Don't ever open it again. Well, like, this is interesting. This gets into the fact that when we start to think about products as service layers, not just a product as a product, a four-walled thing on your phone that you use...
Right.
We have to start talking about the fact that there are different modes of product interaction across channel, cross media type of experience. And that is, some are replacement experiences. I can use this on the desktop or I can use this on mobile, either one.
Mm-hmm.
And there are complementary relationships. I have this desktop experience that I use and I have a mobile experience that complements it, but I can't do everything the same. I'm taking advantage of where the mobile app is. It's on the phone with a set of sensors that helps make the desktop experience better, or not even the desktop, but the whole coordinated experience better.
Right.
Right. And that's a really sophisticated design.
Yeah. Which, for any of you out there who haven't noticed yet, is exactly what we do professionally.
Yes.
Is designing these kinds of systems. And, you know, so we're doing this all day, pretty much every day. Well, if on a good day anyway.
Yes.
So, you know, call us if you have a business problem.
That's right. 1-800.
See, earlier in the podcast where we talk about our contact information.
Twitter handles. Exactly.
Yeah. I think all this is, you know, it's such a difficult thing. And I mean, I've talked to other architects and, you know, user experience designers and interaction designers and visual designers and people across the spectrum. And of course, like, visual designer, I'm throwing in there specifically because that's the one thing that loses in all of it, really. Because if there's no interface,
Right.
Then there's no visual design necessary. If the phone never comes out of your pocket, you don't even turn the screen on.
Yeah.
So what's the visual designer going to do? I guess the splash screen for when you first install it? Sorry, guys.
Right.
You know, this, more than that.
But. This would be interesting. Is do a design challenge where you say, you have a design problem to solve, design it with no interfaces.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Because that it inspires you to use voice command.
Right.
And geo-triggering and context sensitivity.
Right.
Which is exactly what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Hackathon.
Yeah, right? And that's really, I think, to me, this is where I think, as product designers and product strategists, people building this stuff, that's where we have to be thinking right now, is we have to think, is this an interfaceless design, or are components of it interfaceless? And let's try to remove as many interfaces, maybe, as possible. I don't know. That probably is a little bit too opinionated a statement. You may not always want to remove interfaces, but you should at least think about the fact that, is an interface necessary here?
Exactly. And I'll give you, you used the word conductor earlier, and I really wanted to make a metaphor, but now I have the opportunity. When I think of the API in that metaphor,
yes,
as the violin.
Okay.
So the conductor is the architect or mastermind who's designing the larger experience. Again, waving my hands like you folks out there in Radioland can see it. Sorry for that. There's somebody who's kind of designing the high level experience. You go from here, then you do this, then you talk to that guy, then he gives you your stuff, and then you go over there, and then whatever. And it's a longer timeline than just, you know, flicking through your Facebook timeline feed, whatever, Twitter feed. So one of the things about music that, I mean, I've been writing a lot of music lately, and the wall that I'm coming up against is I keep wanting to add more. But what I'm realizing is that the really good work that I put out, the stuff that I feel really proud of, is like three instruments.
Right.
And so what we're talking about is, yeah, maybe you could benefit from integrating that one API in there at that moment in the experience, you know, and maybe there's value to that, but it might actually just add noisy, squawky nonsense.
That's right.
Like someone beating a duck against the wall.
That's right.
And no one wants to hear that, or it's distracting from another more important aspect.
Yep.
Like the violin is too loud and the cello needs to be louder.
Yes.
You know, that kind of thing.
That's exactly, you know, that's exactly right. It's the perfect piece of punctuation to put on the end of this conversation, mm-hmm. because the question to ask is not, what should I add? The question to ask isn't, what new thing should I design or create to make this experience work? You have to ask the question as to whether or not you're solving the problem in the right way.
Hmm.
And consider that sometimes removing as much as possible is the better answer. And we have to stop this obsession with more and more and more. Oh, we need lots of apps and lots of emails and lots of websites and all this kind of stuff. Sometimes a service can work just with somebody stopping by the door every day and knocking on the door at the
paper
right
boy.
Time. A paper boy.
Paper boy would be a terrible service if you threw lot like kitchen sink. It's like, here's some mayonnaise.
Right, right.
Ah, now my front lawn
exactly.
is just peppered with bullshit.
Right.
Which is, I think, basically the current state of most consumer
yes.
apps. It's just nothing but distracting ads. Again, I mean, you may have noticed I don't care much for ads.
Ads or features or whatever it is.
Yeah.
But we...
Unnecessary features.
We seem to compensate at the interface level. We say, this experience isn't working, add more interface. Mm-hmm. This experience isn't working, add more interface. Instead of saying, this experience isn't working, remove all the products and start over and solve the problem the right way.
Right.
That's usually the problem.
The Windows approach.
Right.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Why have 10 clicks when we have 50?
That's right.
To solve the same problem.
Absolutely. So consider that your challenge for the week. Look at the problem you're trying to solve and ask yourself if you should just remove all the interface and how you could do it without an interface,
right.
How you could do it without a product or a different type of product, and do a brainstorming session for 30 minutes and say, what if I just replaced this app with email? How would that work? And see if you can think about the problem, solving the problem fundamentally. The experience that the person has with the product and the way that it solves the problem fundamentally changed that. Mm. That's probably closer to the answer than should we add tabs.
Mm.
And that's the difference between UX and UI.
You heard it here first, folks.
There you go. All right. Y'all have a great one.
And next week, we'll probably be talking about Ignite Tampa, which is happening yesterday.
That's
according,
right.
According to the way that this is getting recorded, because yeah. Justin's doing all the traveling. So.
Indeed. All right, folks. We'll see you soon.
Thanks for listening, folks.